Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
I'm Karen in for Alona Europa. Good evening. Happy Veterans Day. Jerry's usually with me. Jerry, my husband, business partner, and co-host. But today, because it's Veterans Day, he is at a veterans event. You guys already know that he does a lot of planning for veterans, helping them get unknown benefits that our veterans deserve. So he is at an event. I'm hoping he'll join me in the next couple of weeks. So I just wanted to say to you veterans, thank you so much for your service. And I think also for veterans' families, I think they're a little kind of left behind sometimes. And I want to thank the families of our veterans as well, because you serve too. You serve and you make a lot of sacrifices. So thank you so much. So today's show I'm really excited about, and you'll see in a minute why, and I'm a little like crazy about it, but I want to give you a little bit of background about me. For those of you who know me, know that I'm a little bit of a crazy animal person, and I was kind of thinking about it, how did this start that I became a crazy animal person? And I remember when I was a little girl, we had a cat in our building. I lived in an apartment building with my family, and we had a cat for the building. So a lot of kids in that building. We had this cat. Her name was Kisi, and we all took care of her. And I remember even as a little girl, like 4 or 5 years old, when my mom gave us chicken, that was before I was a vegetarian, I would leave extra chicken on the chicken. I wouldn't eat it all because we knew we were going to give it to the cat, and I wanted her to have extra food. And then when we grew up, you know, Kisi died and we moved to a house. And one day this cat came to our porch and my dad started feeding the cat and she became our cat. She was out of the street. She was super friendly. She was blackie. She was a black cat and super smart cat. And I think that's where my love for animals came from my family and from these experiences that I had. My family is also, they're all cat lovers, animal lovers, dog lovers. My younger sister, she actually feeds 80 to 100 stray cats every day, which is really amazing. And I need to give her a shout out because I'm super proud of her. She's writing a children's book now that talks about how to teach children to be compassionate and love animals. And that book is going to come out in early to mid next year. Having said all that, I want to introduce you guys to our guests tonight, because I'm super excited to have Life Animal Rescue here with us, Jan and Emily. Emily, you're the founder, and Jan, you are the manager, care for the cat section, and as you told me today, can I say it?
Go ahead.
You said chief Cooper Scooper. So I kind of like that. So I can see why. As some of you know, I have a few cats of my own. And yes, you do become Chief Pooper.
Lots of litter boxes. Yeah.
So Emily, so you're the founder of Life Animal Rescue. Tell us about how all that started out. How did all this begin?
So my mom and I actually founded it together. Next month will be 27 years.
Wow.
And it started from actually a tragedy. One of our little dogs, his name was Alfie, and he got through a loose board in the fence. I was 16 years old and chased after him, and he ran into a horse pasture and got kicked by a horse. And he basically died in my arms on the way to the vet, and it changed my life. I was heading to college to study television news broadcasting, and I started volunteering at the local animal shelter and started bringing home one dog at a time. Didn't really know, you know, what it was going to become, but about a month before I was supposed to leave for college, a very pregnant dog came into the shelter. And back then, they didn't have the ability to hold them for the 8 weeks it took for her to have her babies and then to be old enough to be adopted. So they were going to put her to sleep. And I was there, and they were walking her back to put her to sleep, and I just couldn't do it. I took her home, and I never went to school. And that's how life started. And almost 27 years later, we now have about 100 volunteers that work with us, and we've probably placed about over 6,000 animals.
6,000 animals. Mm-hmm. Wow. Talk about just amazing work that you do. So how did your family react when you said, I'm not going to school, I'm going to start saving dogs? Did they look at you like...
thankfully, very supportive. My mom and I have been in it together all these years, and we still run it together today. And it's a labor of love, really, and we're all as passionate and supportive of this as I am. And my dad, thankfully, works very hard to help support everything. And between everybody, it's become just a compassion project.
Where are you located?
We're in Agora.
Agora Hills, California. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah, and her dad has never had a garage.
So the garage,
of his own.
The garage is donated to the animals.
Converted into rooms for the animals. So, yeah, poor man doesn't have a garage for his name.
Yeah, well, he actually built a few more, thinking, okay, well, you guys take those. We converted those into like a kind of one-bedroom apartments for the dogs and cats. And he built more, thinking he would get those, and nope, he didn't get those either.
That's crazy. So I've been to your rescue many times, and because all my cats are adopted over the years. I've adopted 8 cats from Life, and all of them, and so I've been to the rescue, and it is just amazingly beautiful. The environment you give these animals is something really special. It's not something that you see every day. So you really care for them, and it shows.
We have a really unique ability where we are and to be able to provide for them differently than just a regular shelter or facility. So we're very lucky and blessed to be able to have what we do.
Yeah, and the animals aren't caged. You know, they have the rooms, and so they're not confined to little places. You know?
Right.
So they have a lot of room to stretch out, and the cats have a catio attached to one of the rooms. So, yeah, it's really very nice.
I saw
nice
that catio. I wanted to live there.
I know. One of our volunteers wants me to put a bed there so she can just spend the night.
Well, I can, you know, you can hang like a little hammock off
just,
that
just
tree.
Just needs a little day bed. That's it.
No, but that tree with a hammock is like, it's the perfect location. What does LIFE stand for? I mean, LIFE, I understand, to give life, or it's an acronym.
It's an acronym. It stands for Living is for Everyone. And just a thing I doodled on a high school notebook back in high school, and it stuck.
Wow.
So... yeah, and I believe in that, you know, no matter who you are, or what type of animal you are, that everyone wants to live and have life. And so
how can people contact you if they want to adopt a pet?
We have a website. It's lifeanimalrescue.org, and we also are on Pet Finder under our organization. Every Saturday, we're at PetSmart in Westlake Village, California, doing adoptions, dogs and cats, from 10 to 5 every Saturday.
Okay, I will post all that information for you guys on Facebook as well. So the website is lifeanimalrescue.org, not .com, .org, guys, so just so you know. So, Jen, you take care of all the cats.
Well, we have lots of volunteers
for
the cats, but I sort of coordinate the schedules and, you know, fill in when we're missing
volunteer
for that time slot. So
did you get involved?
I had 2 cats at the time, and this stray cat showed up in my yard, and he was a little unpredictable. He would come up and rub up against you, and then as soon as you went to walk away, he'd bite your leg. So I named him Psycho Kitty because he was a little psycho. And then he disappeared for a while, and he showed up one evening. It was probably April, or so, April or May, and he looked horrible. I mean, he was scrawny, he was beat up, and I thought, oh my God, this cat's sick. And so I managed to get him into my garage, got him to the vet, tested him for the feline AIDS and leukemia, and got him neutered, and everything was fine. And I asked the vet, I said, well, what's wrong with him? He's so scrawny. And she said, well, it's spring, and the male cats only have one thing on their mind, and it's not food. So he ended up being a very nice cat. I had him in my garage and tried to incorporate him with my cats, and they hated each other. So he beat one of them up to the tune of about $400. Wow. And I thought, well, that's not going to work. So I got to do something because this isn't, he's a nice cat. So I knew there was a group over at PetSmart. So I went in to talk to them one day and to see if, they'd be able to show him. And they said, they didn't have a lot of kittens. It was prior to kitten season. I had had him in my garage for about 6 months or so at that time. And he'd been renamed Perkins, because I knew Psycho Kitty wasn't going to help him get a home. But I spelled it, it was for Anthony Perkins of the movie Psycho.
Oh.
But I spelled it P-U-R-R-K-I-N-S.
So yeah. So, associate, yeah. Okay.
So in my heart, I knew he was Psycho Kitty. So they said, well, sure, you could, bring him in on Saturday. And I brought him the first Saturday. And they said, well, come back about 4:30. And I looked at him and I said, what do you mean come back? I said, I'm going to stay here to see who adopts him. And they looked at me like I had three heads. And they were like, oh, okay, you can stay. So I stayed the whole day. He didn't get a home. I brought him back the next Saturday. Well, the third Saturday, he got a home. Wow. And I cried. Because, I'd had him for several months. And so they knew a gullible person when they saw one. And they said, oh, would you be interested in volunteering? And I said, well, I could maybe do one Saturday a month. And those were my famous last words.
So now you do pretty much every Saturday, right?
Oh, yeah, every Saturday. I probably put in 15 to 20 hours a week with life.
That's amazing. So. And it's all volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
All volunteer.
All volunteers. So, yeah, so like I said, famous last words.
Famous last words for all of us.
So
what do you find is your biggest challenge with cats?
Right now it's finding them homes. Because the shelters have, and trying to get to a no-kill status, which is fabulous, because LA used to be a very high-kill city, when kitten season hits, they offer, basically they give away cats for free. So as a private rescue, we don't have the resources, we don't have the tax dollars and everything else, so it's sort of a competition that is a little harder to compete
People,
against.
Spay and neuter your animals, please.
Yep. So it's just, and there's, it's a lot easier for rescues to house cats than dogs, because people will foster a cat and all they need is a spare bedroom or even a bathroom. They can foster kittens. Dogs is a little harder. They have to, if they already have dogs, they may not be able to bring in a dog out of the shelter. So there's a lot more cat rescues out there than strictly dog rescues.
So is that your biggest challenge on the dog side of things?
We have a pretty high placement rate with dogs. I think the biggest challenge for us is just, making the right matches, matching personalities, and some dogs that are great with kids, some dogs that don't want to live with kids, and just making the right match on everybody.
So you get to know your animals on a pretty deep level in order to know who to match them with.
Right. Yeah. And, sometimes we do get dogs that have been traumatized and have a history. Many of them that we're rescuing now come from horrible situations. And so sometimes some of them have a little bit more in their past that is still with them, and they're a tough replacement. So we have to be careful of what kind of home and that home is going to be patient for the time it takes for them to settle in and look past some of their shortcomings.
What is the application process like? Because you don't just, you don't go and say, here, have an animal. You really do take the time to, I remember filling out my first application, how nervous I was. I was like, oh my God. So what is the process like
We have just a one-page application, okay. which I've been told is wonderful because many rescues, it's 3-4 pages wow. that people are filling out. So we try to keep it to just one page and you know, just really to make the right fit.
Right.
We're not trying to change anybody's philosophy on how they want an animal to live. It's just making the right match so that everybody's happy and it's a permanent home for these animals. So, again, if you have kids, you know, finding a dog or cat that's going to be good with kids and vice versa. If you don't, you know, finding a dog or cat that doesn't want a family with kids to play with. Right.
Or with other animals.
Right. Too. Some dogs want a friend. Some dogs don't like other dogs or cats. So it's just really, you know, getting to know our animals and what we think is going to be the right match for them.
Right.
And that's the hardest thing is a lot of people don't understand that not every animal is right for every
right.
home.
Now people look at the outside rather than the inside of the mm-hmm. animal. And each animal has such a specific and unique personality
right.
that it's really, you really do have to do that. And I remember filling out that application and being really worried if I'm answering the right questions, the right answers. Are they going to approve me? I haven't had a cat since I was a little girl. And what is that going to say? I do love cats, you know. And yes,
yeah. Yeah.
eight
no,
cats later.
It's a, you know, like I say, it's a matter of making the right match and getting the right animal because we want it to be successful,
right? Of course,
you know, because it's traumatic for them to have to come back.
Of course,
so we want to make sure you know do it as best we can, you know, to make it right the first time.
So, I've always loved animals, but I've never volunteered at a pet rescue because of the emotional aspect of it. I don't think I could handle it. So, how do you cope with all these? I mean, there's amazing success stories, I know, but there's a lot of things that are really sad that you guys see. So how do you cope?
Luckily for us, I think we get the happy endings a lot more than some of, you know, the rest, you know, we work with international now with the dogs, bringing them in from other countries. And the people we work with that are actually on the front line saving these dogs, they're seeing a lot of the horror stories, you know, that they're telling us about and we're seeing the photos of. But we get to have the happy ending when that dog that's gone through such horrible things then gets into a happy home. So for us, it's that end piece that brings it all together and makes us be able to keep going. Because there is a lot of negative, sad days for sure. But it's that one wonderful, happy day that makes you be able to keep going on.
I really applaud you for being able to handle that, because I know for me, you know, you have to know your shortcomings, and that's my shortcomings. As much as I love animals, I don't think I'd be able. I'd be sitting home like crying. It's like I want to save them all. I can't, and you can't save them all. So again, spay and neuter people.
Yeah, and you know, some volunteers, you know, they realize it's not for them. You know, I mean, we get, you know, pulling animals out of the shelter. They often come with diseases.
Yeah.
Some of them are very bad diseases. You know, we have great vets we work with that, you know, work with us, and fortunately, you know, for the most part, we're able to pull them through, but there are times when you can't.
I know,
and that's hard. It's hard.
I know there are laws now that are being passed. I don't know if it's passed yet in California, but in other states, that the state becomes a no-kill state. I think Colorado is one of them, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I wish California would become.
Well, we're 100%. Definitely heading in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, the city of LA is vastly improved.
Yeah.
You know, a lot.
That's.
They are hoping in the next few years to become a no-kill city.
And Camarillo, where we used to almost exclusively pull from,
because of kill,
was very high kill, and they have achieved no-kill status. You know, no-kill means, you know, if an animal is injured and sick and they can't help them, they will humanely euthanize them.
That's the different story.
You know, yeah. You know, but, no, they've achieved, you know, great things up there.
That's amazing.
So
to hear.
It's more city by city, county by county. But there's definitely a movement towards that. You know, and they've gotten very creative, you know, with a lot of what they're doing.
What do you mean creative?
Well, just, you know, like having fairs, taking their animals to other, you know, to an adoption fair. You know, shelters never used to do that.
They're also working with some of the small you know, rescues that fly dogs out, or, you know, there's a lot of Chihuahuas in California and there might be none in New York. And so they're not, you know, take 10 or 12 Chihuahuas that are not getting adopted here, fly them to New York and they're getting adopted right away.
Oh,
so it's just, you know, trying different methods to.
So working across the country and not just in your local community.
Right. And there's a lot more of that with, you know, cooperation between groups. There's a group that flies animals, like if there's a hurricane, they fly down to Florida and empty the shelters out and take them to Seattle and Philadelphia where they'll get a home, and that way the shelters have room for all the displaced animals.
I love that.
So there's just this cooperation between.
That's great to hear.
You know, everybody has a little niche that they do. And like I said, you know, the Chihuahuas that here are a dime a dozen.
And, and you know,
New York, they want the tiny dog for their tiny little studio apartment that's 10 feet by 10 feet.
So you mentioned, Emily, that you started rescuing animals from abroad. So how does that happen?
27 years ago when we started this, there was none of those movements we just talked about. We would go into Camarillo Shelter and there would be a list of animals that they'd give us that were all being put to sleep the next day that we'd have to pick from. And it was, that was the heartache of that. And our the need for us to be rescuing locally was great. 6.5 years ago when we started International Rescue, Camarillo went no-kill. LA City starting to get into the no-kill movement where they're going to move that direction. So we just felt like the timing was right to try to expand our resources into helping some other animals that really stood no chance of survival in some of these other countries. And for us, I don't think rescue has borders. A life is a life. I don't care where it's coming from, but they all need help. So if we can broaden our horizons a little bit and help in other places, I think it's greatly needed. And we're bringing animals over that if they were in a shelter here, there would be 100 people waiting to adopt them. And yet they're on the street or they're in horrible circumstances and nobody wants them. So it's similar to the Chihuahuas, moving them to a place where they're wanted. We're doing the same thing with some of these just in a different country and moving them here where they're wanted.
What's the process to bring an animal?
And this is a great shout out to anybody listening. We're always looking for flight volunteers, and that's anybody that happens to be flying from any of the countries we work with to Los Angeles. We attach these animals as excess luggage on these people's tickets. It doesn't cost them anything. We pay all the fees. We have somebody that meets them in the airport they're leaving from, and we have somebody that meets them in the Los Angeles airport. And really all they have to do is walk them through customs and show the paperwork, and they've helped to save a life. So anybody that, you know, is flying, we work with Thailand, we work with South Korea, we work with China, and we work with Doha, Qatar, or Qatar. And any of those countries, if they're flying in from there to Los Angeles, they can help.
Qatar,
China, and South Korea.
And South Korea.
Yes.
Okay. Does it matter what port in, or airport in China?
Usually it's like either Beijing or Shanghai. Right. Yeah. And the airlines do matter as well. There's a few specific airlines that work with us more than others. So, but anyone flying is encouraged to send us their itinerary, and we can let them know if their flight would work for us.
I didn't realize that it works like that. I thought you were sending them by crates at a time. And
they do still go in the cargo part of the plane, but they go as excess baggage, which cuts costs for us by about 60%.
Wow.
We couldn't afford to do it otherwise if we were just sending them cargo without a passenger.
So do they have to have all their shots ahead of time? So you're working with shelters there. They do all the paperwork. They work with the vets. They give you all the paperwork, and you bring those animals
Correct.
Here. So how many animals have you brought?
We've probably flown about 2,000 dogs already.
Oh,
over.
Wow. That's amazing. And two cats.
And
three cats.
Yeah, three cats.
just three cats? And I have all
You
three
have all three.
And I have all three of them.
You're the international cat lady.
I am international. I'm not just a cat lady. Not just a crazy cat lady. I'm an international crazy cat lady. Fantastic. Oh, my goodness. So I have two cats that I adopted in May, June that
came from Thailand.
They came from Thailand.
Yep.
And one cat that we adopted about less than a month ago, Mateo, who is just now starting to kind of get used to our other cats that came from Qatar. So, yeah, I'm very, very happy with them. And they're amazing animals. So,
and they all speak the same language.
And they, well, you know, there's some problems in translation sometimes. But we're working on it. You know how it is introducing new cats. Yes. You got to have a lot of patience.
Cats are not as easy as dogs to introduce.
Yeah.
For the most part.
There's definitely a process. And anybody who is introducing a new pet to a current pet needs to kind of do the research and understand what they're, you know, it's a process. It's not going to be, oh, I brought a new pet in and everybody's happy. Sometimes it is, but I'm sure most cases. I know with cats, it's usually not, but I don't know how it is with dogs.
I think for us as well. I mean, that's one of the most frustrating things we have is we, you know, spend so much time trying to make the right match and adopt them out, and then we get a call the next day that it's not working out.
And the next day.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because it takes at least a couple weeks for an animal to settle into a new home and to be able to start feeling comfortable. And we beg people to be patient and give it the time it's going to take for these animals to adjust, especially from where they're coming from and what they've been through.
Yeah.
Our first, you know, and sometimes they've only been with us for a couple of weeks when they get a home.
Yeah.
So they've just, you know, they've flown halfway across the country. They've spent...
That's so traumatic.
You know, yeah, a small little, you know, amount of time with us, barely knowing the volunteers, and then they go to a family.
Yeah.
So and it's traumatic. So, yeah, they need the chance to... You know, to chill
decompress.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I want to kind of say that when people go to see an animal and they want to adopt, I mean, look at the ones that are a little shy or timid. Our first cats, Romeo and Harley, were just like that. I think they were at the rescue for over 6 months. Mm-hmm. Very not people friendly. They didn't like people. It took us maybe 6 months to be able to even touch them. They completely refused to be pets. And then we worked with them. You work with them. I actually, for a while, for Romeo, hired a pet shrink and worked with a pet shrink for Romeo because he was in, I think he was, we don't know, but I think they were abused by a man because they were really scared of men. And, you know, I worked with them. And now these cats beg us, they're 10 years old, beg us to be pets and to be loved. And if I'm putting on my shoes, Harley comes running because he knows I'm leaving. Rum comes running, turns on his back, mommy pet my belly. This is a cat that I couldn't touch when I first adopted him. So, just, you know, be patient and look for the ones that are a little shyer and not as friendly because... Just give them love, and it changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so rewarding to watch them blossom, too.
Oh, my God. It is so rewarding. That's just the best thing. Having said that, I want to kind of mention something that happened today to one of my very, very close friends. And guys out there, I need your help. So one of my friends today calls me up and tells me, I'm not going to go into all the circumstances. If you want to know and you're interested, please contact me via Facebook. There's my phone number, LA Talk Radio, Accent On, whichever one you prefer. So she tells me that she has a dog that's an older dog and needs to fly out of the country to be with this family. And the dog... is supposed to fly out tomorrow. And they go to the vet, and the vet said, no, I can't sign off on this. The dog has a heart murmur, enlarged heart, some fluids around the heart, and I can't sign off on it because the dog will die in the airplane. So the vet said, you know, we can treat the dog 2-3 months and see there's a good chance that the fluids will go down with the meds that we give the dog. But she needs the dog to fly out, but she's not here, and she needs somebody to take care of this dog for 2-3 months. All the medication and everything is paid for. The dog just needs a foster home for about 2-3 months. If anybody's interested or anybody knows somebody who's interested, please contact me so we can help this really amazing, amazing dog that's good with kids, good with other animals, and just a sweet, sweet, sweet dog. I know this dog personally. So anybody can help out. They'll be, Ilona and I will be very grateful. Thank you. So we started talking about the animals from Thailand. And I know recently there was a crazy story about a dog that got away. So who wants to tell me the story? Because this is just the most amazing story. This is the most amazing story.
So his name was Sooty, and his name's Barkley now. But he got adopted by a young couple. And the day after they adopted him, we get a call that he got loose. And they were walking him, and he has some sort of fear over the light posts that are in their complex. And we actually witnessed it after we got him back, and he definitely has a fear of these light posts. It's bizarre. So he absolutely flipped out on the harness and martingale collar he was on and got through both of them and got out.
Oh my goodness.
So anyway, we rushed over there. You know, anytime anybody gets loose, we've got about 20 people. We get on the phone immediately to come help us. And Jan is one of them, being an animal communicator as well. So Jan comes right away to help with any of these. So he gets out, and they're in a area that's definitely coyotes. And it's very, very scary for us to have one out.
Big dog, small dog?
About 25 pounds.
Corgi. Ish size, long and low.
Okay. 25 pounds is pretty small for
small enough to be definitely worried. Anyway, two nights go by. We're out there all night looking for him, and we set up a trap, and we get Dog Day Search and Rescue involved, which they were wonderful to come out and help us right away. They brought another trap.
They're a local group that just goes around and tries to trap animals that have gotten out.
What's their name?
Dog Days Search and Rescue.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and there were sightings. You know, people in the apartment complex had seen him.
Okay.
But he wouldn't come up to anybody. Okay. You know? And, you know, he'd literally been with the adopters less than 24 hours. So he didn't know them, really, at all.
Right. So I reached out to the rescuer in Thailand where he came from, told them what's going on, and she said, I wish I could be there to help. And I said, if you think that he would come to you, then let's get you out here. And she, within 5 hours, was on a plane from Thailand to come help try to find this dog. And that night, she was flying all night into the next day. That night, we actually got a sighting of him trying to go into, we had a camera on one of the traps, and we got a sighting of him trying to go into one of the traps. And he almost got in it, and then backed himself back out before it closed. And then within an hour of him doing that, we got a sighting of a coyote going into that same trap.
Oh my goodness.
So we were all very nervous that it wasn't going to be a happy ending on this. And we were out there pretty much 24/7.
Yeah. They came across a bobcat up on this hill where he had been. Goodness. So there's bobcats, coyotes. It was 100 degrees that weekend.
Wow.
So, you know, and he didn't have food or water. You know, we had bulls out, but we didn't know if he was coming up to him or not.
Wow.
So
anyway, she arrives, and we go straight from the airport to where he's missing. And she recorded a recording on her phone of the rescue in Thailand that she has, where he came from, with all the dogs barking and her calling out to all of them, and just as familiar sounds for him. And she was playing that on her phone, and she went and sat in the area where we thought he was, and we spent the night there that night up on a hill, and we didn't have any luck that night. Went back, and the next day got like 2 hours of sleep, and we get a call that somebody had seen him running in the neighborhood, like across the way. And so we rush back out there, and she starts using this thing again to play her video and is calling him. And I had just walked through this same area. Thankfully, it was a cul-de-sac that someone saw him run down. And I walked through all the houses and nothing. He had disappeared. Anyway, she walked the same path I had just walked using this video and calling him. And she starts walking down one driveway, and all of a sudden we see him coming out. And she turns around and gets down on her knees and calls to him, and he runs into her arms and jumps into her arms. And it was just incredible, absolutely incredible. We were all there just crying and videoing and watching this, and it was amazing. So
those are the good moments.
Those are, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Those are really the good moments.
Yeah, and what was really interesting, too, we found out she wore the same perfume every day when she went to
her rescue over in Thailand.
Mm-hmm. And she had brought that with her. So she had she was, you know, familiar sounds, familiar smells, you know, familiar voice, you know, because, we'd only had Sooty a couple weeks.
Yeah.
When he got adopted, so he, you know, he didn't know us, he didn't know the doctors, but he knew her.
So now he's with that family,
and everything is good.
Don't walk him by light.
Steer clear of lamp posts.
That's crazy.
I wonder,
you know, what goes through their heads to make him freak out.
You just never know what that reminded him of that was traumatic for him.
Yeah, he was found with his mom and siblings in a construction area. Wow. So I don't know, maybe there was some piece of equipment that looked like a lamppost or something. So,
amazing. I was following it, and I was just, I didn't know the whole story until now, but I knew that she came out and he ran to her. So this is really, what a great.
It was really an exceptional moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. So, the second part of the show, we only have like 10 minutes left. I want to talk with you guys and our viewers kind of about animal safety. So there's a few things that I think are really important for people to be aware of, and I don't think people are aware of, and for bringing awareness now to animals and adoptions and safety of animals. I think this is something really important to bring up. And one of those things is to think about what happens to your pet if something happens to you. So Jerry and I talk about, Jerry is my husband, he's an estate planning attorney. One of the things that he also does is pet trusts. And we actually have a pet trust for our pets. If something happens to our cats, something happens to us, what happens to our cats? So I'm not going to talk legalese because that's not what I do. That's his domain. Just want to kind of touch upon that pet trust is something that you can set up. You can set it up for your kids. You can set it up for your parents. You can set it up for veterans. You can set it up in a million different ways, but you can also set it up for your pets. So if something happens to you, who's going to, you need to think about who's going to take care of your pets, who's going to pay for it. And a pet trust sets up that exact idea. Who's getting paid, how they're getting paid, who's taking care of the pets. And it's good also for incapacity if something happens to you and you can't take care of your animal for a short period of time. What happens to that animal? So if you want to know more about pet trusts, feel free to call us at our office at the law offices of Gerald L. Kane at 818-905-6088. So now that I've said that, I want to go more about talking a little bit about more pet safety. So last year, we all went through the fires that happened around Agora, Malibu, Oak Park. And one of the things that people don't realize is that you have to prepare and how to get your animals out. You had to evacuate, right?
Yes.
How many animals?
Well, I'm a pet sitter, so I had two clients whose cats I went and picked up, my own cats, and then the rescue called and they'd gotten the evacuation notice. So I had 19 cats in my car.
That's
in carriers. Everybody was in carriers. One of the clients drove back into the area because they were just down in Newport, and so they took their three cats, and that's when I went up to the rescue, and three more cats went
I saw where the fire got to the rescue. It was right I mean, right at the border.
Couldn't have been any closer.
When we left, when we left up there, we honestly, we thought, oh, we'll be back in an hour or two. It's never come through here. And we were wrong.
Little did we know.
Very wrong. But between the rescue dogs, Emily and her mom's dogs, you know, my cats, my pet sitting client's cats, one of the other volunteers was there with her cats, the rescue cats, we had something like 36 cats and 27 dogs.
Wow.
Loaded up into various cars. You know, and then we all were standing there going, well, where are we going?
So there was really nowhere to go.
Yeah, well, the problem is with that many animals, who's going to take you?
There's nowhere to go. You know, it's we had never thought that step, you know, so it is important to think it all the way through. Yeah. You went, oh, yeah, we can load everybody up, but then we didn't really think about where are we going. And for so many people, it was the same situation because every hotel between, you know, the Conejo Valley and the airport was booked.
Yeah, they were all booked, and you couldn't go up north because there was another fire further north.
So we ended up in a parking lot.
That's
you know,
crazy. So we ended up evacuating too. Yeah. We ended up the first night spending at our office, and then we found a pet hotel, pet friendly hotel that was amazing to us for the rest of the time of the fire. But you know, this last fire that happened 2 weeks ago, I saw a news program about this lady. She came on and she said, you know, I heard about the fire. I was told there's going to be maybe evacuations. I left my work straight home, went home, but I couldn't get home because they already blocked off. The fire spread so fast, they blocked off our street and they wouldn't let me in to get my pets. So one thing I think people maybe need to think about doing, if you have animals of your own, put a sign on your front door, picture of your animal, and the firemen, the police, they see that and they know there's an animal in that house. They will help rescue that animal. They won't leave that animal to get in the fire. So if you can get to your animal in time, have some kind of plan like that you can get to your animal. So I'm just now, I saw that lady and it just came to me. I mean, I don't have that in my house, and now I'm making a picture of all my animals. So if something happens, if we're not home, they know that there are animals in this house and they need to come and get them and rescue them.
You know, I have a backup person too.
You have to have a backup, yes.
You know, that might be like, you know, I went and picked up the pet sitting client's cats.
Right.
You know, and I've done that many times. You know, this was obviously the worst what we all went through the last time with Woolsey.
Yeah.
But I've evacuated many animals.
Yeah.
You know, over the years. So, you know,
yes. And you're our pet sitter too.
Yes.
And
then
we were
thank God you were, you know, you were home because I was out of room.
Well, we were out of town in January and there were the rain started and they were talking about maybe having mudslides. And Jan's like in my house. She comes 2 or 3 times to check on the street. And I'm like, do I need to come home? It's like, no, you're okay. I spoke to the fire people.
Just having eyes on the ground essentially is very comforting for people. So, I'm always on fire patrol and for both the rescue and everything. Okay, let me go over there. Check this out.
That was really crazy last year. And it's been exactly a year on the 8th. It was exactly a year since the day we evacuated.
Yeah, and it took us a long time to get back in, all the animals back to the rescue because we had to clean everything. You know, as you saw, it was, you know, it came within 3 feet of the building where the animals are housed. And so we had to go in and, you know, vacuum everything. And, you know, we threw out cat trees that were just had so much ash on them. There was no way to save them.
Yeah.
So it took about a month to get all the cats back and the dogs we had back in a couple weeks, I think.
Yeah.
So one thing I forgot to ask you before, so for Life Animal Rescue, what is it that you need? Do you need donations? Do you need volunteers? Do you need foster families? What is the one thing, or all of the above, what is the thing that you really, really need?
We always need volunteers because people do come and go.
Okay, so you're located in Agoura Hills, California.
In Agoura Hills.
Okay. Which is Thousand Oaks, Westlake area, for those of you who don't know where Agoura Hills is.
Yeah, so, you know, we're always looking for volunteers, you know, flight volunteers for coming from overseas. Because that, you know,
Thailand, Qatar, China, there was one more.
South Korea.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people, if they can put this out to their works, people, business people that are flying, it's all word of mouth. And that's how we find our flights. So we talk to everybody, you know, just in conversation. Oh, my husband is taking a business trip. Or, well, where is he going? So just to get the word out and talk to people. And it really saves lives. And there's no work involved.
Yeah. Guys, if you can share this video and write in your comments about this, that would be a great help. The more shares we have, the more people comment and see this this show, is the more we can help all these animals.
And, you know, and always financial donations, you know, is always important.
How can people donate financially?
On our website, lifeanimalrescue.org, there's a link, donate button.
Lifeanimalrescue.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure people...
And we, you know, we have Facebook fundraising auctions that we do 5 or 6 times a year, and people post items to sell, and the money goes to Life. And, you know, we have all sorts of cool items on there.
Okay.
We've got one coming up November 29th.
So November 29th, you have
auction? Start of the auction. It runs for about 12 days.
Okay. So I have my own business. Mm-hmm. I do personalized gifts, and I know exactly what I'm donating this year.
Yeah. So and it's a lot of fun. You know, we've got some great items, lots of dog and cat type of items. So that's raised, I think we're on our 19th auction coming up.
Wow.
And we've raised over $30,000 from
that's
those
amazing.
Auctions, which go towards the animals' flights coming over here.
So do you do it in a place, or do you do it online?
No, it's online. It's
all
online.
On
Facebook.
Okay.
Life Rescue Fundraising Auctions on Facebook.
Okay.
And you can find it if you just go to our Life Animal Rescue Facebook page.
Yeah,
you can find it through there.
So, so those are a lot of fun, and, you know, get to know all the people on there in the bidding. And it's bidding, you know, so whoever has the highest bid at the end of the auction wins the item.
That's great.
So,
I love it.
Yeah, so we got lots of cool stuff.
So I have a couple ideas of things, too, that I can donate that I think would help raise some money.
Fabulous.
That's awesome. And there's another thing that I forgot. I have my notes here, but I forgot to mention when you do a pet trust, you can also leave assets to Life if that's something, a cause that, that's important to you. That's what my husband and I have done. And you can do donations. You can do my husband told me exactly what you can do. Let me just read it for a second here. I know I have it here. You can make the beneficiary of your pet trust Life Animal Rescue, and you can leave a charitable donation in your will or your trust to Life. So I think that's part of my husband and I pet trust that
we don't want you to die.
I don't want to die either. Definitely not before my animals.
'Cause I get them.
Yes. I don't know if you guys heard that, but Jen gets them all. But it's the other way around, too. So Jen is the person who will take care of our cats should something happen to both me and my husband at the same time. So yeah. I appreciate that. And Jen knows our animals because, again, they're all from Life.
Yeah.
So one more thing that I want to bring up about animals and their care is now during the holidays. I kind of printed out off online and I posted it on my Facebook page for Halloween that there are some foods that are really toxic to dogs and cats that people don't realize. And a lot of you probably still have your Halloween candy. And guess what? Chocolate is highly toxic and it can kill your animal. So please keep your chocolates, macadamia nuts, raisins. What else? Do you know what else in terms of foods? Garlic, I think, right?
Garlic and onion for cats.
Garlic and onion.
Well,
is it for dogs, too?
Not food items, but poinsettias during the holidays are poisonous. So
they're not as bad as they used to say.
No.
What is?
They're poinsettias. They're not as bad
what
as what
that?
The red flower.
The holiday plant. The
Christmas
that's always.
Oh, wait. Now that's my next list. A huge list that I downloaded from the Humane Society. I was shocked at how many plants. All these plants are toxic.
Yeah. Lilies for cats. Lilies will kill a cat. So
daffodils.
Yeah.
What's that flower that you kiss under?
Mistletoe,
highly toxic to them too. I'll post this list also on Facebook so you guys have it. I've stopped having plants in the house. I have plants in my backyard, but I don't keep plants in the house because my cats are. There's so many that are toxic, and they go to them straight away, and I just don't want to.
I had a cat that ate my silk plants. So
your silk plants.
Yeah.
Don't keep silk plants.
I don't have any plants. I can't even have silk plants.
Fantastic. So I think we're just about out of time. Thank you guys so much for coming. I really enjoyed the show. I really enjoyed hearing about life.
Thank you.
I hope you guys
us.
Did too. And I will post all the information that we talked about on our Facebook page.
Great. Well, good thank
night.
You. Thank you so much for having us.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.